huge news, years in the making, my brand new book that my publishers refuse to publish, Money Matrix. Beat the money system and build generational wealth. Understand the three main ways that the banks productize you and make money from you. You'll be able to turn that system against itself, build generational wealth and multiple streams of recurring income. It's all at moneymatrix.cash. And if you're quick, the first few hundred registrants and buyers will receive many special bonuses from me. The brand new Moneymaker Summit 3-day special event. Meet me at a champagne reception. Meet me at a multi-millionaire networking dinner. Go now, moneymatrix.cash. This is huge.
Welcome to the Disruptive Entrepreneur Podcast.
What does the word disruptive mean to you?
Means going beyond the ordinary, going beyond the status quo.
Not thinking in the conventional way, not just sort of following the herd.
Disruptive means shaking things up, you know?
Disruptive entrepreneur is somebody who sees the problem and embraces the problem with a new way.
Shake up and awakening.
Quality will take care of itself, and you'll go from being disruptive, but also profitable.
When you use your own reservoir of talent, when you love what you do, then you disrupt.
Mix it up, change it up, and dominate.
And now, your host, 8 times best-selling author and double world record holder, Rob Moore.
Hi, it's Rob Moore here, and welcome to the Disruptive Entrepreneur Podcast. Now, I am in the boardroom of Alfie Best, who's a Romani gypsy and has built an empire of £350 million, starting work and business at the age of 10. In his boardroom here are all the sites that he owns. He owns big commercial properties. He owns golf courses. He's just bought a brand new helicopter. I think you're going to love this interview. There's lots of insights. He's a very real, down-to-earth guy. So welcome to the podcast with Alfie Best. Alfie, I just want to thank you for taking the time. I know you're very busy, as we all are. I've never asked a question to start like this, and I feel it's a bit random, but I'm going to ask it. So do you think being born on the side of a road has shaped the way you are as a person and a businessman?
No, I don't. Not at all. I don't think it really matters where you're born.
Yeah.
I think it's the journey of the life that shapes you.
Mm.
So whether that had a part of the journey that I was on, of course it did.
Yeah.
But actually, the you know, where you're born, in my opinion, you know, what's in you is in you.
Yeah.
I get asked a lot of the time, do I think it's nurture?
Right. That's an interesting one.
You know, yeah. nature that creates entrepreneurs.
Mm.
I don't particularly see myself as an entrepreneur.
Right.
I see myself that somebody that is an artist.
Mm.
I love what I do, and I'm painting my own canvas.
Mm.
I'm just very lucky to have a lot of other artists around me who are my team.
Yeah.
That are as good as me, if not possibly even better, in their own fields and area.
Yeah.
And we're painting. You know, we're painting a picture within the business that we do, and I think we're making a pretty good landscape of it.
Great. So you've sparked two questions in me already that aren't on my script, which is the way I prefer it anyway. So the first thing is this nature versus nurture thing in entrepreneurs. I have a pretty strong opinion. I'm sure you have. I'd love to hear yours. Do you think entrepreneurs are born or entrepreneurs are made?
I think we're all born differently. And the word entrepreneur is bandied around way too much,
right?
In my opinion,
yeah. By podcasters like me, probably.
Well, no. I think we use the word entrepreneur. None of us really understand exactly what it is.
Mm.
You know, is it a man that operates one business?
Yeah.
Does that make him an entrepreneur?
Mm.
That he's successful at that one business that he does,
right?
Or is it somebody that operates many different businesses,
yeah,
and can, you know, operate from one field to another? In my opinion, that's what a true entrepreneur is.
Right.
A true entrepreneur is somebody that can spread their wings.
Mm.
And not only are they successful in one field, they're successful in others.
Yeah.
There are, and you know, to confuse the two, one is a businessman, one is an entrepreneur.
Right.
There's no big difference in how successful they can both be.
Yeah.
But the difference is, you know, one guy has been successful at one thing that he's done in his life. That's fantastic. That's great.
Yeah.
You know, but there are other people that are successful on a multifaceted level. To me, that's a true entrepreneur.
Yeah, yeah. And you've got golf courses, you've got plenty of parks and homes, you've got a business empire, you've had car businesses, mobile phone businesses. So you must be an entrepreneur.
I believe that I'm an entrepreneur. There's still a long way to go in life for me to prove that.
Yeah.
You know, I've still got to get to the end of the term and be successful. You know, what you see now is successful.
Yeah.
Well, we're only halfway through the game. A lot can change.
Yeah.
And anybody that thinks that they've made it, anybody that thinks that they're successful, that's great. But what they've got to remember is you're successful at that given time. And there are plenty of successful people that have fallen over.
Yeah.
Including myself. Including myself. But it's about taking the hardest knocks and the smallest knocks and becoming more knowledgeable from them.
Yeah.
And not treating them as a downslide, treating them as a college education. Because that's what you got. You got a degree in that backslide.
Yeah. Right. So I like that. You mentioned something earlier about, yes, you're an entrepreneur, but also you're not finished and you've still got a long way to go. Can that be a curse sometimes for an entrepreneur that you want to become successful and you want to do good and make a difference and make some money along the way, but you never quite feel like you've made it as well?
I live in fear.
Yeah.
It's fear that drives me. Not, you know, I had a friend of mine who's I regard as very successful. He said, "What on earth are you worried about?" I said, "Tomorrow." I said, "Tomorrow." And look, we have a lot of companies. We're looking within the next 18 months, we will take Wildcrest to the market. Is it something that I plan to do? No. It's been actually a gradual build-up, but I believe that we're groundbreaking in what we're doing. We're the only park operator that is ISO 9001 registered that's ever existed. We're the largest residential mobile home park operator that operates in Europe that's ever been. So we're not the largest, we're the largest there's ever been. We also have a home authority agreement with the fire department, a home authority agreement with Trading Standards. We're the only operator that has those. So we're the one that's setting the bar. We're currently taking on a lobbyist to lobby the government within changes within the industry. And we do believe there is some changes that need to be made within law. And there are also some changes that have been made that actually aren't helping the industry. If anything, they're causing a lot of one park operators to land bank.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the killer of all societies, to land bank.
What's the point?
Exactly. But the government cannot see some of the laws that they're bringing in place or looking to implement are causing land banks.
Yeah.
And we've seen this. We own parks in North Carolina and America.
Right.
And we've seen this there, where all of a sudden there is no investment going into the parks because there is no commercial gain for the operator.
Yeah.
And let's not kid ourselves. A mobile home park is a home. It's a village where people live, but it's also a commercial business.
Of course.
So that's a real balancing act. You know, keeping people happy as well as making it commercially viable. And anybody that believes that you can run a business that's not commercially viable, speak to every administrator or banker or receiver.
Or go and have a hobby somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. And a hobby costs you money. So, you know, you've got to then have another commercial business somewhere else that's going to fund that. I'm not in the business of commercial hobbies.
So there's a couple of things here. This is great because most of the questions, I think, we'll just end up having a chat about this. Why then do you live in fear in business? Why, you know, what you said, I think you said you sort of were fearing tomorrow almost. Why?
Listen, I live in the real world. where changes can happen from unforeseen events. Let me put it to you another way. Interest rates are, I believe, at 0.75%. Is that that's the base rate? That's the base rate, I believe, at the moment. Unheard of.
Mm.
Yet they've been in that position for the last, you know, 5 years or longer. And, you know, if you said to me, what do I believe is a fair interest rate? It's 5%.
Yeah. I think long-term average is something like 5 or 6, isn't it?
You know,
so that's normal.
That's what I believe to be normal.
Yeah.
If you said that to somebody now that's just bought a house, they'd actually think I was mad.
Yeah.
But I've been in business when interest rates were 15%.
Mm.
And I'm reasonably young when it comes to, I'm 48 years old. So when you talk about businesses of this caliber, and our business is the largest in its sector.
Yeah.
And we're a young business. We're 17 years old. It's a baby.
Ooh.
It's a teenager. So we live in fear.
Mm.
Look, Brexit now that's going on. I just bought a new helicopter and we need that to be able to get around the parks. We've got 75 parks throughout the country. Due to the Brexit, the rate with the euro has collapsed, and that has cost me an extra 200,000 euros. So that's a small point of how it can affect.
Mm.
We don't know, and now our Prime Minister doesn't seem to have the backing of front benchers and back benchers.
Yeah.
I've got to be honest with you, I'm a fan of Theresa May,
because
she's taken on a job that the other guy asked for and then didn't want because he got the answer that he didn't like.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. You were voted in, actually, to act in the interest of the public, which is the UK. Not throw your toys out of the pram because you didn't get what you want.
Yeah.
So I think Theresa May gets a lot of backflack for an issue that she didn't create, what she is actually looking to try and solve.
Yeah.
And I think there needs to be more people that are backing her.
Mm. So we'll come to that in a minute. So you've talked about some of your fears that drive you, the reality of the world and business, but clearly you haven't let the fear cripple you. And I do see a lot of people, they're watching Brexit, they just let everything cripple them. Because, I mean, look, you can fill your head with a lot of negativity all day, every day, if you want to. So how do you let the fear drive you rather than cripple you?
Okay. Fear will exactly do that. It will cause you to descend or it will cause you to climb. The decision is yours. Mm. My fears push me.
Yeah.
Because it drives me to get up early in the morning, enjoy what I'm doing. I feel like a Premier League football player going out to play a game of football because I eat it with a spoon.
Mm.
You know, negatives are bad. They're very bad. But only it's you that makes them bad.
Mm.
A problem is only a problem when you cannot find a solution.
Mm.
The moment you find a solution, you've become enriched. You've become a better business person. You've actually become a better person because you've gained that knowledge through experience. And what is it? The deepest cuts are what carve us.
Mm.
It's those. Life doesn't mold you.
Yeah.
Life cuts pieces out of you.
Mm.
And it's up to you at the end of your journey if you've become a masterpiece or whether you've become a misshapen, misconstrued bent within life.
Mm.
Now, for me, my fears drive me forward because it's the fear of going bust. It's the fear of failure. And I turn those fears to positives because I understand what my negatives are. And if I can't do something, we make sure that we have somebody in our team that can.
Mm. And how did you develop that mindset? Was it something that was always in you? Or was it just growing your businesses? You realized if you wanted to grow a business and be successful, you had to develop that mindset.
I try to simplify things. And there are winners and there are losers. Believe it or not, both are successful.
Mm.
But one is more successful. And I simplify it by thinking of it as a boxing match. If you want your hand held high, you've got to give more. You've got to fight more. You've got to push more. You've got to be smarter. You've got to unravel the puzzle of how that other fighter boxes. If you can do that, you've put yourself in a better position to be able to win that match. And also the preparation of training.
Yeah.
You know, take, for instance, Tyson Fury, you know.
What a story.
Basically got knocked out. Got knocked out
cold,
on the canvas.
Cold. First 5 seconds, cold. And, never seen anything like it.
And then he looked like he just raised up.
Yeah.
To me, that's the positivity of success. Because if he hadn't have had that gut to push forward.
Yeah.
You would never have heard the success stories now of how did he come back from that. That's the story of a winner.
You've got a boxing background, haven't you?
Have you?
And do you think that in any way has helped you, you know, deal with business in a more successful way?
I wouldn't say that. What I would say is it's just that I take the simple attributes of life and compare them to a complicated situation. You know, you're on a boat and the boat's sinking. You see 30 people running around. Well, the first solution is fix the hole. Fix the bloody hole. Simplify things.
Yeah.
By keeping it simple, life is simple. And it's up to you to do that. I sit with many different people that can absolutely make a Big Mac sound complicated. And I sit to somebody else and they go, that's cheese and a beef burger. You know, I want to sit with the people that simplify it and let the solicitors deal with the intricate mechanisms of the crossing the I's and dotting the T's, because that's what they're being paid to do.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I've become really good friends with Gerald Ratner over the last few years. And I had a few hours with him a couple of days ago, and he says, and make everything really complicated. I like them managing the numbers, but really I just like me to make the decision. I go and make the decision and then ask questions later. And he has very much a beg for forgiveness rather than ask for permission mentality. And you just reminded me of that. I don't quite think you answered yet the question on whether you think entrepreneurs are born or made.
Well, like any good politician, I was avoiding the question.
Yeah, so are entrepreneurs born or made?
Are entrepreneurs born or made? I think, and this is not a cop-out, I think it's both.
Yeah.
I think we can all teach ourselves to become more, but entrepreneurs are natural risk-takers. They're calculated risk-takers. They weigh the pros and the cons up, and they're gamblers, but calculated gamblers.
Yeah.
And that's an entrepreneur. And I think that's something that's within, but of course you can always nurture even the smallest flame. Some of us are born like bonfires and some of us are born as a spark.
Yeah.
Bonfires normally burn out.
Yeah.
Sparks normally get fanned if they're fanned correctly and they can then turn into a bonfire.
Yeah.
Remember, life isn't a sprint. Life is a marathon. And it's about you, you know, bringing in those sprints within your marathon when you need it. And then you slow down, you take a rest, take a breather, reconvene, and then sprint again.
Yeah.
On those times that you need to.
I don't think your answer was a cop-out, actually. I really agree with you. And I've kind of gone full circle on this. I think when I was in my mid-20s, I had a pretty negative view on life. I was a bit downbeat. I was a struggling artist. I was in quite a lot of debt. And I just thought I was a complete victim and the world was against me and I was the most unlucky person that had ever been born. And that was my glass half empty reality. And then I sort of turned things around. I did a lot of personal development courses, the American ones, Tony Robbins and all that lot. And that really injected me with some positivity. But then I went the other way and I was all like, whoa, everything's great. You know, I love life. And, you know, and then crying in the background, you know, like a lot of people are on social media now. Mwah, look at me. Yeah. And then depressed in the background. And having kids, I think, taught me that, because I thought with my kids, I'm going to raise an entrepreneur. And I thought that any kid of mine would be born and raised an entrepreneur. And I've got two kids, a son and a daughter, and they're both completely different. It's like you took every personality trait that exists, cut them in half. My daughter got half, my son got half. And with my son, you can't push him. And with my daughter, you have to hold her back. And so I realized in them, there are certain traits that absolutely were born in their DNA, I'm convinced. But at the same time, I also see that they can be shaped and molded and guided, and Ariana will need holding back, and Bobby will need gently, but not too hard, pushing forward. So I don't think it's a cop-out. I actually think that's the right answer. It's a balance of both.
I gave us I don't know if you call it a speech or whatever you'd call it, or a talk on the one of those motivational shows where on the last one that Les Brown did in Westminster.
Yeah.
And I watched a number of people that didn't do it for me. I'll be really honest with you. And they come across, it was learning somebody how to swim who actually couldn't swim. And that I don't agree with. You know, but there was another guy who came on there I was really impressed with, because he summed it up to me. Some people are better athletes than others, and some people are better trainers than others. Mm. Now, I used to box, then my son boxed, and I then took a coaching course and became a coach. And I was the absolute most dynamic amateur boxing coach you'd ever want. You know, it took over my life.
Yeah.
But I wasn't a good coach. Mm. The reason I wasn't a good coach, I was actually reliving my boxing through my son and through the other boys that I was training in the club. Mm. That's not a good coach. That's a good coach needs to be standing back as a teacher and not taking the glory, you know, and, oh, didn't I do well by teaching you how to throw that right hand?
Yeah.
No, no, no. You threw the right hand. You helped him nurture to do it. And if I went back to coaching, which I would love to do at some point, but again, my business has to come first.
Yeah.
I would take a different view on it. Mm. Again, I learned there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an intriguing debate. On the other side of it, though, because I think some people may think they haven't got the required skills. And until a doctor gets some genetic chromosome code out or shows me a microscope and he goes through the chromosome and says, well, there's the entrepreneur DNA. So conversely, I don't think there's entrepreneur DNA or world number one golfer DNA. I think there's probably latent talent and maybe some genetics, like if you want to do basketball and you're 6'8", that's probably a bit of an advantage. But that talent has to be nurtured, matured, developed.
Well, I learned something. It took me a long time to understand it. Everybody has a success gene. Mm. Everybody. They don't have to be an entrepreneur. I'm only successful because I have a phenomenal managing director. Mm. I'm only successful because I have a phenomenal estates director, a phenomenal planning director. Those people came together. They feed off of me. I feed off of them. And it is solely and wholly those attributes, as well as yourself, that make success. Success isn't just being an entrepreneur. You need many, many other traits. There was a study that I watched on the television, and it was about who makes the best business people. Is it a manager or an entrepreneur? After they'd either sold out or the business had gone bust. Mm. And what they found was the entrepreneurs were risk takers, and they would take the calculated risks and go for it. Mm. The manager would be more reserved and, well, that's a bit too much. We're not pushing the boat out so far. So then by not doing that, it stifled the business. Mm. And their businesses failed through risk diverse. Mm. being risk diverse. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And all of those things. And that's a big balancing act.
Yeah. Yeah, I've found entrepreneurs often make terrible managers.
Oh,
because we're so chaotic and our big picture. And then managers, like you said, often make bad entrepreneurs.
I'm a terrible manager.
Yeah.
I'm not a very good manager at all.
Mm.
With the teams that I have within the businesses that I have, I genuinely believe they complement. There are, you know, we have bad apples.
Yeah.
In our business. Of course we do.
Mm.
You know, but it isn't about the bad apple. It's only the bad apple at that time.
Yeah.
It's about actually nurturing them sometimes through a bad phase.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a good business does.
Mm. It's funny. There's this phrase that I think the Brits love and the sort of success story, and they make it on TV that they love, that I think your ethos challenges and I disagree with. And there's all these people saying, oh, it's all about being self-made. You're self-made. You're self-made. Well, I'm not self-made. I've got 80 staff. You've got a load of staff here. Without them, I would be nothing. And so I don't want people to think it's all about, I've got to do it on my own. I've got to start from nothing. I've got to be self-made. I've got a great MD. Without her, I'd be running around like an idiot.
Yeah, but I think you're selling yourself short. And the reason I think you're selling yourself short is you're the one that pulled them together.
Mm.
You're the one that saw that spark.
Yeah.
You're the one that fanned that flame. There is the only thing that I would agree with you with is you have to make a decision of whether you're a boss or a leader.
Yeah.
And they are two.
And what's
complete.
The difference?
Wow. A boss tells you what to do.
Right, yeah.
A leader stands in front and takes the bullet in his chest for you if it comes to it.
Yeah.
You know, a leader fights with you.
Mm.
A leader doesn't direct you.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
Mm, yeah, and I guess the journey ideally is move from boss to leader. When I first started in business, I did it because I wanted to work for myself because I was terrible at being told what to do. And the biggest delusion I had for a good few years in business was that people worked for me and they should do what I tell them. And I only ever really grew as a business person when I completely let go of that. I work for them. And they don't work for me. They work for themselves. Okay, I might be paying them, but they don't work for me.
What I would say is this. Look, when we do an interview here, somebody comes into our business, we ask them, what's the most important thing in a business? And most people say, team. Okay, that's a thumbs up. That's a yes.
Mm.
What's the second most important thing? Oh, suppliers. What's the third? Well, the directors. What's the fourth? Well, the property where you work from.
Mm.
Okay. So they're the most important things in the business. What's the most important thing that you pay first? They all say, well, your team, because without your team, you don't have a business.
Mm.
Okay. So the team are the most important and they're the most important to be paid first. Yes. Who's the second? Second, suppliers. Third, directors. Fourth, mortgage or business rates. Promise. Mm. Okay. You go to them with the most important thing is the team. The most important thing to pay is the mortgage or the business rates or where you trade from.
Mm.
And they all go, well, how does that work? Because if you think anything of your team and you want to nurture your team, you want to give them a job for life, not for a month, because you don't pay that, the business closes.
Yeah.
They're out of a job next month. A second. And all of your team should be transparent about what the goals are of the business.
Yeah.
The business has a goal, everybody needs to know what that goal is and what the policy is.
Mm.
Now, our goal is very simple. We want to be the world's largest residential mobile home park operator in the world.
Yeah.
No, that's our goal.
Mm.
Now let's do a business plan to see how we can get there. We've done it.
Mm.
5 years. We will be the world's largest.
Yeah.
At the moment, there are some giants in America. We believe that we'll overtake them.
Mm.
And we will.
Yeah.
Second, what our policies are. Our policy here is yes. Policy is yes. Whatever a resident wants, the answer starts with yes. And we'll try that.
Mm.
You can try. You can be a resident. You can try us. A resident rings up here, whatever they want, it starts with a yes. Now, they may not like how we get to yes. But the answer is yes. Mm. For instance, let's say a resident rings up, we want new CCTV cameras. We want new roads. We want this. We want that. You know, you're entitled to do it because you own the site. And we are. The answer is yes. But there will need to be a rent increase to cover the cost of this. Well, why should we do that when you own the park? Well, because you're benefiting from it because you live on the park. For us, there is no benefit. We're not looking to make a profit. But what we are looking to do is cover our cost to do it for your benefit.
Mm.
And when it's explained, most people understand that there needs to be a commercial exercise to it.
Mm. So let's change subject slightly. Mm-hmm. You left school pretty young and you got into business pretty young. Do you want to just talk us through that journey?
Yeah, sure. I'm a Romani gypsy. So when you use the phrase born on the side of the road, it has this magical, poor feel to it. I swear to you, it's only now when I look back, I realise how financially poor we were. Spirit rock wise and, you know, childhood wise, I had a magnificent childhood.
Mm.
We were rich beyond belief. Mm. But, you know, financially, not quite as much. But I didn't realise that.
No.
I didn't know that. You know, when people use, oh my God, we were poor. If you were really poor, you didn't know it.
Mm.
You didn't know it because you didn't know any different. You didn't know any different.
Yeah.
So I didn't think we were poor.
Mm.
You know, we had a fire outside, you know, where we would cook the meat on an open fire outside on the grass verge. I didn't think that was poor. I actually thought that was normal.
Yeah.
You know. But then, obviously, I went to work with my dad. I went to school, you know, periodically. There's quite a funny story, actually. I went to school for about 3 weeks to this one school in Cambridge, and we pulled onto a place called Cambridge Fair. And my mum made me go to school when I was about 8 or 9. So I went to school and I'd get beaten up by the kids in the school for being a traveller that lived on the field.
Mm.
And then I'd come back and get beaten up by the travellers because I was going to a gorgeous school.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, sometimes...
Doomed.
You're damned if you do, yeah. if you don't. But, again, you take the good out of that.
Mm.
And do you know what that learnt me? It doesn't matter what you are, who you are. If people perceive you as different, they only want to make you weak by their own injustices.
Mm.
And it doesn't matter who it is.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, and that's through their own... self-doubt. I went to work, obviously, with my dad, and we went out tarmacking. I was knocking on doors from the age of 10.
Wow.
And, you know,
did you enjoy doing that?
Did I enjoy doing it? That can be soul-destroying, you know, having the door slammed in your face, being... I don't believe in racism. I actually don't think it exists. I think it's a made-up word for some do-gooder. But I do believe in abuse.
Mm.
I do believe in abuse, and I think there's a lot of it.
Yeah.
And as a traveller, going to the door and being mentally abused, for instance, you know, you'd be nice, excuse me, madam, would you be interested in having your drive resurfaced? You're not one of those gypsies, those dirty gypsies that live down the road, are you? That's a mental profound. Mm. And you have to say, don't be silly. Of course we're not. What, those dirty? Oh, no, don't be silly. You imagine the profound effect? And when people say to me, how would you describe being a traveller? And there is a very simple explanation. We are black men in a white man's skin.
Right.
Does that make sense? Because if you're black, you have no choice but to say, of course I'm black. Do you understand?
Mm.
Whereas a gypsy, you're not. You're a white man. There is no physical difference.
Mm.
It's actually a bloodline and a way of life.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Mm. So that effect causes you to hide your identity, because it's damaging to you making a living.
Mm.
And it wasn't only in, so I went through life pretty much canvassing up until I was, I don't know, 14 or 15. And then I started my own real business, which was car trading or van trading. And I realized that if you went and bought a Land Rover in central London, it was worth more in Wales because there was a much better use for it. Whereas if you bought a minivan in Cheshire, and I'm using that, you'd find that had more use in central London. So you could make a small profit, £100, £50, by buying them from one part of the country, delivering them to another, and then reselling them because there was more of a use for that type of vehicle than what there is. Look, if you take a 50cc scooter, that has a fantastic use in central London. Take it to the middle of Wales, they would laugh at you.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do.
So it's about finding your market.
Yeah.
That learned me a lot.
Mm.
So I then did really well. I was flying. I thought, there's no stopping me because I was also a workaholic. But I wasn't a workaholic. I just loved what I did.
Mm.
So when I got up, I wasn't working.
Yeah.
I'm not working when I come to work now. I might be really busy and run off my feet, but I'm not actually working. I'm playing. I'm coming to work with I've got more bounce than Zebedee. I'm just there for the ride. Mm. I then bought my first van rental centre, purchased the freehold at 18. And I'd saved up £25,000 and a £100,000 mortgage. Build the site, I was flying. I then bought a house for £500,000, had a £300,000 mortgage, and at this time I was 20. And that was 1990.
Wow, with inflation, that's a lot of money now, isn't it?
So I was absolutely, I bought a brand new Porsche.
Mm.
I was the man.
Yeah.
I was the man. But I wasn't experienced.
Yeah.
And the 1999-2000 recession set in. Interest rates were at 12.5%, 13%, 14%. And it was as if somebody put a fence around the business and said, toxic.
Mm.
Don't enter.
Right.
And that's what business happened.
Mm.
I had a murmur, 20 years old, collapsed across the desk, a heart murmur.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Because I was physically starving. I couldn't afford a £20 gas bottle to even put there because I had to turn the heating off.
Mm.
It was that bad. So I then had to react because the banks had closed my credit cards. Banks were threatening to close the accounts. So I then moved out of my house, rented my house. That paid the mortgage. Just.
Mm.
And I was in that horrible saying, you may not have heard of it, called negative equity.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Oh, people owed more
than
the value of the house. You know, they were harrowing, harrowing. And would I say, I've got different scars over my body, but I carry a mental scar for what that recession did to me that's so deep. I remember it vividly today.
Do you think that's where some of your fears that drive you in business have come from?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. I then broke down the car site, cleared all the vans, sold them, took a massive loft, cleared my overdraft and rented out small sections. And all that did was barely cover the mortgages.
Yeah.
And through the good grace of God and sheer grit and determination, I managed to cover the mortgages.
Mm.
So I stayed afloat. I then slept in my car and I then started driving around London looking for a job or for something to do. Was I going to go back cold calling? And I really didn't want to do that, but I would have done.
Mm.
If needs must, what is it? Have to is a great master.
Mm.
Having to do something masters us all.
Yeah.
So I didn't have money to do market research. So I did the next best thing. I looked for a business with a queue, where there were people queuing. Now, I came across two businesses. One was takeaways. And you always found the busy ones were next to the schools. They were thriving businesses.
Yeah.
And the other was mobile communications. So I begged and pleaded and did have to beg and plead to get a job. Now, you've got to understand, 4 months previous, I'm living in a beautiful house, my own business, making circa £100,000 to £150,000 a year, 20 years old, driving a new Porsche, to now driving an escort van and getting paid £70 a week to basically be the tea, sweeper, salesman, general, all in all, at the phone, at this phone shop.
Yeah.
But I learned their business very, very, very quickly. Within 6 to 8 weeks, may even been 3 months, I then left, set up my own shop. How I did that, there were shops up for rent everywhere because businesses were closing. I then went to an estate agent, agreed to take on a shop for a 12-month period, rent-free, but we would pay the rates. That was a good deal for them.
Yeah, yeah.
We still is today.
Yeah.
We come round a couple of cycles.
We opened the shop, and within 18 months, we had something like 13 stores or 14 stores. I can't remember now. We worked that business for a period of 2 to 3 years. We then sold it out to a very large telecoms company who then in turn sold out to Vodafone.
Yeah. Are you allowed to disclose what you sold it for?
About £4.5 million, a lot of money.
That's great. And you're what, 22 at this point or something?
23.
Wow.
23.
Yeah.
And then I went into commercial property. I invested that money. But before that, sorry, what I didn't tell you was, I also bought all the shops on mortgages.
Mm.
So I'd owned the shops, but now my tenant was Vodafone.
Yeah.
So I'd turned second-rate tenants, me, into a first-rate tenant, increasing the value.
Huge on commercial property,
absolutely,
isn't it?
Yeah,
it's where blue all chip the value is, yeah.
Becomes blue chip.
Yeah.
So I then added a third value to the commercial property portfolio, as well as being paid out.
Yeah.
So I then started building commercial property. We still own that business to this day.
Right.
And we own around about 70 acres of industrial and commercial property from East London all the way up to Sheffield.
Yeah.
In about 2018 now?
Mm.
So about 2010, would it have been? 10? No. 2001. Year 2000. 17 years ago, whatever that is.
2001.
Yeah. We bought, that recession that I spoke about wasn't 1999, it was 1990.
Right, yeah.
Jesus Christ, where did the years go?
Yeah.
When you're having fun.
Yeah.
In 2001, I bought our first mobile home park. And since then, the business has grown. It's a business that excites us. It's a business that we feel that we are part of the key to the housing solution chain. Mm. We're allowing people to downsize when they're not actually downsizing. What they're actually doing is moving into a home, possibly even bigger than the home they moved from. But it just happens to be a prefabricated home that's built on a chassis.
Yeah.
You know, and mobile homes have moved on. They started as a caravan, then became a static caravan, then became a mobile home. Now, then they became park homes.
Mm.
Now they've become park home bungalows.
Right.
So the model has moved on dramatically.
Mm.
They're an environment where retired people are living longer.
Yeah.
Where retired people are living in a community of like-minded people.
Mm.
But it is still a massive fight with the council to extend those sites. But we have a massive problem here in Havering. And we have started to develop out on what we believe land already has planning permission. We've just been refused by Havering Council, and they've asked us to kick 10 people off that have got their homes on that land in a borough that can't meet its housing criteria. So, you know, it's frustrating to think that, you know, there is still a stigma attached that they can't see past their nose.
Yeah. Mm. And I guess, well, it sounds like what you said at the start, you want to change that.
Of course we do.
Yeah.
Look, I believe that we are the face of the park home industry.
Yeah.
I believe there is a lot further for us to go. This year we did £25 million worth of acquisitions. We have a further £25 million ready for next year, and so on and so on.
Mm.
You know, our business and the economy overall is down this year, but the difference is we're a business that was built on solid foundations.
Mm.
So because we're built on solid foundations, our ratio to borrowing with the bank is 20%.
Yeah.
Our mortgage borrowings across the board is 20%.
So even in a big downturn, you're not going to go past any of your restrictions or covenants, are you? You're not even going to get close?
No. Well, look, we have an asset value within Wildcrest of £350 million.
Yeah.
And our borrowings are £60 million.
Yeah.
You know, we're very transparent about how it is because it's there on Companies House to check.
Of course.
But
is there an argument you're under-leveraged?
I'd rather be under than over.
Mm.
Could we be leveraged more? Mm, the mental scar that happened to me in 1990 certainly has ingrained me to don't overcommit unless it's absolutely necessary.
Yeah. And I suppose what that might do if there's another recession, because, I mean, look, I've not been in as many cycles as you. I think you've had sort of three cycles of business experience. Yeah. I'm really only in my second. But we bought a lot of properties in 2008 and 2010 for next to nothing, like three-bed houses for 40, 50, 60 grand in Peterborough, which isn't it's not like up north.
No, but...
And so that really helped grow our business, a bit like you getting all those year rent frees. I mean, if it had been a booming trade at that point, you wouldn't have got all those shops rent free.
There are so many opportunities in the UK at this moment in time for foreign investors, but these opportunities are being stripped away from us within the UK.
Mm.
We're too, the governments that we have in place now, and as I go back to what I said, I'm a fan of Theresa May, not for her governing policies, because I actually haven't seen any yet that I can actually say. I think we've all been so consumed with Brexit, and the pound has collapsed against the dollar, against the euro. For what? Idle talk, idle chit chat.
Well, in the last two or three years, what have they actually done? We're not actually in or out. It's just a hell load of.
Well, we are in. We are in because we're still trading under the same tariffs, you know.
So nothing has changed other than all the talk.
Exactly.
But there's all this fear and.
But the fear mongering. And I'll be honest with you, the reason I believe that people voted out was partly because of the scare tactics that David Cameron was trying to invoke.
Mm.
You know, he's bringing on the big guns, the President of the United States, to tell him how, oh, we won't trade with you.
Yeah.
Do you want to know something? When you've got 70 million people in your country, are they saying nobody's going to step outside the net to do business with us? Hold on a minute. I think in Europe, we're the most largely densely populated country.
Mm. Yeah, we could have a rant about the government all day long.
I'm not ranting, I'm stating what I believe to be facts.
Yeah. Do you think maybe there's just not enough private sector experience and practicality within the governments? I mean, it's obviously a public sector thing. Do you think if there were a few more people in those positions that were a bit more entrepreneurial, that had run serious businesses, that might help?
I know the Prime Minister of Barbados reasonably well. She's a fabulous woman, one of the most dynamic people that I've met, and a straight talker. She got voted into the country that was virtually bankrupt. And within the 4 to 5 months that she's now been in power, she keeps everybody informed via the social media. Okay, you could say that's a form of marketing, but communication is key.
Mm.
Secondly, she is pro-business. How I come to meet her is we started to invest into Barbados. And due to the fact that we were investing into Barbados, she wanted to know me.
Mm.
She wanted to reach out and arrange a meeting. And I was like, wow. You know, she said in no uncertain terms, Alfie, we want people like you investing in Barbados.
Mm.
You know, what I see here in the UK is we're trying to penalise people mm. for investing in the UK.
Yeah.
Get a grip.
Mm.
We're not big enough to manufacture and supply the rest of the world. We're a service country and a financial base hub.
Mm.
Don't lose sight of that.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. So I'm mindful that I could spend all day with you. I love just love doing this, and you've obviously got things to do. So should we move into sort of more quick fire type questions?
Sure, fire away.
And you know, you can answer them as long or as short as you want. That's up to you.
Yes, no.
So no. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, fine, done. Yeah. Traditional education, i.e. school, university, versus self-education, teaching yourself on the streets and stuff. Do you have a view on what's best?
Yep. Absolutely both.
Yeah.
Education gives you the tools within life, which are a guide rail of rails. So if we think about it like this, think of a train, you know, the fastest superior train in the world. That's the top band of education that's going to put you on the tracks and and you're going to carry on as long as you use that. Self-taught education out there on the street is a dune buggy in the desert. You don't know what's going to come over that other side, but you're going to have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Especially if you're driven.
Mm.
If you can mar the two together, you've won the lottery.
Yeah.
Because you're learning from the trials and tribulations of life, but with the self-balance of knowing you're on the right track.
Yeah. Why do you think you've succeeded where many others have failed? What's the difference?
Because I did exactly that. I was self-taught. I was there in the dune buggy flying over there. But I then realised I had to educate myself into the way the rest of the world works.
Mm.
But it was that muzzle, that street wit and wisdom and craft of being a gypsy, of being a street trader, of being a hustler, added to the small amount of education that I've taken courses on.
Mm.
I've taken courses on management skills. I've gone to night classes to improve my literacy. All of those things because I realise you have to have both.
Yeah, I love it. What's your outlook on business, if you could summarise it?
Business is the soul of any country. If you want your skin to blossom, you have to eat the right food. If you don't eat, you'll starve. If you eat the wrong food, your hair will fall out, your teeth will fall out. Business is the soul of any country.
Mm.
We need to nurture business more. We need to stop promising what we're going to do, but actually teach what we're going to do.
Mm.
Because this goes back to, if you give somebody a fishing rod, which is what we tend to do, we give people social security money. I don't agree with that. What I agree with is, hold on, there needs to be a value added to that. And we want you to take a course, and we'll still give you. So you have to give up 5 hours of your week to go and do those courses, which will give people the tools to go out there.
Yeah. What's your outlook on life in general?
Positive.
Yeah.
Listen, how can you not be positive around me? I love life. I embrace it. I love it. I think of life like a beautiful woman. It's up to you to make sure she goes out in a positive mindset.
Mm.
It's up to you to be honest and truthful and tell her, that's not how it is, but this is how it is, but do you want to come along for the journey? Or do you want to actually suffer the moaning, the groaning of what happens within life, within relationships?
Yeah.
It's up to you to keep it positive.
Mm. Hard work or smart work?
Both.
Graft or leverage?
Both.
Yeah.
Let me explain both. You've just said smart work or hard work. Work smart. Always work smart, but work hard at doing it.
Mm, love it. Has money made you more happy? There's a lot of people in the world saying that money doesn't make you happy, and those people haven't got any. You have.
Mm.
And you've also not had it, so you've had a good balance of experience in both. Has, you know, being a very successful businessman worth a lot of money made you happy?
Of course it has. Money does make you happy because money buys you freedom.
Mm.
And what does freedom do? Make you happy.
Amen to that. Who do you admire and why?
I admire my son because he was born as my son, which is what do they say? You know, tall trees catch a lot of wind. But he has made his own way.
Mm.
He owns two mobile home parks.
Wow.
He's now...
How old is he now?
He's 21. Ooh. He turned professional as a boxer, won his first fight. Didn't want to take it any further, but went out there and did it, trained to do it. He's built his first motocross track himself. He's just opened up his business doing waste disposal and rubbish collection. And how could I not be privileged to have a son that's doing that, where he's got most people around him saying to him, what do you need to work for?
Yeah.
So he's got that an uphill task.
That could be a curse, yeah.
Well, it is.
Mm.
It is.
Yeah.
And the hardest thing in the world is to teach somebody money is like water. If you don't know how to build a dam, you won't water your crops with it, and it will just pass you by.
Mm. Mm. So what would you regard as your biggest win and your worst defeat?
Oh, that's a good one. Wow. Okay. Biggest win? Financially, mentally, or physically?
Let's go with, because this is a business podcast and I love money too, let's go with financially.
Financially, I bought a park for £5 million. And it was a phenomenal park. It's the best park that we own. Today, that park is valued, and we've owned it 3 years. Today, that park is valued at £50 million.
Wow.
One deal.
10 times return in 3 years.
I would say within a year.
Wow.
And it's made a profit on the way.
Mm. And did you buy it in like a downturn?
Not really.
No?
Not really. We just looked at a business that had been completely overlooked by somebody else who wasn't, you know, willing to put the money into it.
Yeah.
That's the best financial deal that we've ever done.
Wow.
And it's real.
Yeah. And then your worst defeat?
Worst defeat. Trusting the wrong people. The wrong people will cause a cancer in your mind. They'll drag you down. And when it goes wrong, tell you they told you so. The best people will encourage your mind, and when it goes wrong, help you get out of it.
Mm. And have you learned a couple of ways to spot and filter those kind of people?
Yeah. Trust isn't given, it's earned.
Yeah.
Trust absolutely no one and ask them not to trust you.
Right.
And the reason they should not trust you is if they have any worth, they won't, and they'll be looking out for you.
Mm.
Because I don't trust anybody.
Mm.
Do you know why I don't trust them? Because I love them. Because I think a lot of them. Because if they tell me it's right and it turns out it's wrong because I didn't take the time to check, who did I let down?
Yeah.
Them.
Mm.
Because I should have checked for them.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, I really like that. What's the best advice you've ever been given?
The easiest thing to get rid of is money. The hardest thing to get is money.
Love it. What's the worst advice you've ever been given?
Bust me.
And then two more things. And the final one will be, let everyone know where you are and where we can follow you and what you do. It'd be great. This podcast is called The Disruptive Entrepreneur. We've got now nearly 2.5 million disruptive entrepreneurs all across the globe that are subscribing or have downloaded the podcast. What does the word disruptive mean to you?
Well, it depends who's asking and what context that it's put in. But disruptive to me is somebody that's ruffling the feathers within the confines of how we think, which I perceive as a good thing, not as a bad thing.
Yeah. Great. And then where can we follow you or what work are you doing that you'd like to let the world know about?
Wildcrest Parks is truly a forward-thinking company. And we are out there beating the drum to change the housing network. And this is a big thing that I'm going to say. Not only do we want to change it, we want to change people's lives, and we are changing people's lives. We are the technology industry within the housing market. Mm. We're doing a real thing for real people. And am I passionate about it? No. I just love it.
Mm.
So much, the passion was long gone before, because we don't please everybody, but we're pleasing most of the people.
Yeah.
And we will not be defeated by second thought mind people that still see park homes as a second rate living when they're still living in a house that is basically a ball and a chain around their neck that cannot free up their equity.
Mm. And do you do social media or anything like that? Or
yeah.
Can we follow you anywhere?
I'm on Twitter.
Yeah.
I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram.
And
it's AlfieBest33. Yeah.
Right.
And look, I'd love people to follow us.
Yeah.
And anything that we... And people message me all the time for advice.
Yeah.
There is something that I would like to add.
Yeah, please.
Not only is it a pleasure being here, and I want to thank you for coming into the offices, you don't actually realise, or maybe you do, how much good you're doing out there for people that are watching and looking to start their business. What you're doing is giving them something, because as I go back to, some people are just bonfires out there waiting to burn out. Others are just a simmering spark that just need that fan of flame. And you're doing that every day. You need more credit for that. And that's not a cop-off of me giving you a build-up. That's how I genuinely see it.
Mm.
You know, by fanning that, you're creating the next Bill Gates. You're creating the next Richard Branson. Because they're there, and they just need that little bit of...
Thank you. That's a lovely way to end and lovely thing to say. Really appreciate it. Thanks for letting us in your offices.
Pleasure's always been mine.
Seeing all your empires. Alfie, thank you very much.
Pleasure's mine.
Thank you.
All done.
Yeah, great.
Right.
Thank you very much, Alfie. Thanks for tuning in. And remember, if you don't risk anything, you risk everything.